people, and dad's going to sit in the house and study. And oh yeah, they were fine with that. You know, they took him on the tour and they showed him around and you know, hopefully by my believing in them, they were able to do that. You know, some people, if a bus would come, the children would run behind the house and peek around, see who's coming. You know, like they're scared of the people. I guess that's all right. You know, that's fine. But I think it's something neat when your children see the needs. They're already ministering to people when they're 8 and 9 years old, 6 years old, 3, actually younger than that. And my mom taught us to do that in such a great way. And I think that's something I'm trying to do to my children. I'm not saying I'm doing it all right, but I think that's something that we need to, as leaders, challenge our children to something greater in life than just themselves. We only grow when we are challenged. If you don't have a challenge, you're what? Coasting, right? If life is easy, you start coasting. And what way are you going when you're coasting? Uphill? Downhill, right? And what happens when our life is going downhill? It's getting worse, right? So if we have no challenge and we think we can just stay normal and just keep doing what I always am and life is still going to go good, if we're coasting along, no, you're going downhill. It's getting worse. So our life needs to be continually filled with challenges. And I think we need to find a way to continually do that to our children, to our church people. You know, they always say you can, if a church doesn't get a challenge, they'll soon have splits. So what do we need to do? Maybe outreaches, maybe call some people to the mission field. And I think that is really true. You know, if we don't have a challenge in a school or in our churches or in our families, things start getting worse. And we start fighting about things that aren't necessary to fight about. But, you know, if our children are too busy helping people, then they're too busy to talk about themselves or their issues they have with their teachers or who's not mistreating them nice. You know, it's so much funner to come have your children come home from school and saying, oh, such and such was crying today, and I kind of went over to him and talked to him, and it's sad what he's going through, they say. You know, I pity him like everything. And the next child will come home, oh, a tough day today. People weren't nice to me. My mom never took that off of us. My mom always said, don't ever come home crying and saying people aren't nice to you, because you need to be, if you ever want to have friends, you need to be the friend, not them. So I never came home crying because I didn't have friends, because mom didn't pity me. She always says it's your job first to find friends, not for people to treat you right. So that's how I grew up, and hopefully I'm teaching my children the same way. But I think that's what leaders do. They challenge you to the next level, next greater purpose in life than just your own selfish things. People are different, so they need different challenges, and I think that's something that as a ministry, as an employer, as mom and a dad with our children, we need to find ways to challenge different children in the family. We have different personalities, right? And that's the fun part, because you know, some of my children are fairly smart, and some of them are kind of the poorest in the class, and there's certain challenges I give some, and there's certain challenges I give the others. And I think that's something that we need to do, is find out what fun challenges our children thrive on. You know, I have one boy that he loves mechanical work. Well, the poor guy, his dad doesn't. So I got to try to help him thrive on mechanical things. The other one's a little bit more like me. He's more like he loves history and politics and debates and things like that there. So I need to challenge him on that part. And I think it's, yeah, scary sometimes. Right? Sean's up at Bald Eagle right now. And in fact, he probably had the biggest challenge of his life this week. Chet, you're the only one here at Bald Eagle? Danny's there, right? Mark, you were there for a while? Right. Sean had a bad week. He had a boy named Shiloh that was at camp about 2 months ago, and he went home, left camp, and now things are falling apart for Shiloh, and life is just mistreating him horrible. So he decided he's going to make up some stories, and now he's saying that his chief, Sean, which is my son, was mean to him, he neglected him, he wasn't a good chief. He told the authorities this. Well, guess what? Now the authorities need to investigate. So now Sean's in the middle of this here. This is, it's not really funny, and it's kind of scary for him. And me as a dad, I got to try to, try to tell him to be a man and say what's right and take it like he should. He's up there and I'm down here. I can't really be there for him all the time. So, yeah, pray for Sean. But I think God's doing it for a reason, right? And Sean can come become a better person because of it all. I can get all upset and angry and try to get him out of camp and bring him home because it's probably not going to be fair, everything he's going to see. But we can take this as a challenge and learn from it, right? So that's what I'm trying to do this week. Do pray for Sean because it's, I think the state will realize the boy's manipulative and trying to get camp in trouble, and because he just wants everybody else miserable because he is. And Sean's not too worried, but he is kind of scared. So yeah, my other daughter, Ronica, she teaches school. She comes home with all kinds of challenges. I don't know how many of you have children that are school teachers, but you find out a lot, right? Yeah. And actually, she graduated from high school, taught the next year, so she was really young. I thought she was a little crazy trying it that young, but she did. She likes it. She's actually dreading next year because this year she had a really challenging class, and next year she kind of found out they're all behaved, they're all kind of angels, and she's just afraid she's not going to have near as much fun next year because the challenge isn't going to be there. So that's great. I like to hear that. So she'll still enjoy next year. But yeah, she likes a challenge too. So no, it's good to see your children doing that. I think we need to keep driving them towards a greater purpose. How does Jesus challenge us? I got three ways here, and I want to speak to myself on this, and maybe to tramp on a little bit of toes on the rest of you here on this too. One way he has is our priorities. I want you to give up this for something better. Does Jesus ever do that to you? Does Jesus ever tell you, I'm going to challenge you on your priorities. You're doing good, but I want you to do this thing here in your life to something better than that we were doing. Oh, God, I'm doing good things. I'm raising 8 children. But no, I want you to do more. Does God ever check your priorities out? You know, when the rich young ruler came to Jesus, he said, you know, I've pretty well done it all. I've kept the rules, and it's kind of sound like a midlife crisis. I'm not sure. Maybe I'm there too. But you know, I've done my thing. I've started my business. I've almost got my children raised. But I think he came to Jesus, said, you know, I've kind of obeyed all the rules and I've done all this thing right. And he goes, what more do I need to do, Jesus? Jesus did what? Looked at him and loved him. One thing you lack. Go sell everything you have, and give to the poor, then come follow me. That was the next thing. He said, check your priorities. He said, there's one thing you lack, one thing. That's not too bad. I mean, it's probably more than that, but that's what he said. I challenge your priorities, he says. Young man, says he gazed at him, looked at him, he loved him. Sell everything you have, that's the next challenge. And he wasn't willing to do it. How sad. Is there a challenge in your life that God is calling you to? That you're not willing to do? Are you like the rich young ruler that God says, you know, I think you can do better. You know, the Lord's challenging me in my life. You know, I don't have to say how much I give. 10%, a lot of us do. God says, I would like to see you give 20% next year. Are we willing to listen? Are we going to take that challenge? And my money's pretty important. I got plans for that other 10%. But God will call us to our priorities in helping us in some things that we need to change on. He'll challenge us in our priorities. He'll challenge our faith, the second one, by asking you to do something that's impossible. Let's turn to John 6. I'm talking too much. Some of you need to talk. Ask questions. I should be asking you questions, right? That's how to get people to talk. John 6, verse 6. This is where feeding of the 5,000. And verse 5, when Jesus then lifted up his eyes, he saw a great company come unto him. He saith unto Philip, whence shall we buy bread that these may eat? Is Jesus worried? You know, Philip, what are we going to do? How are we going to get all these people to eat? Jesus wasn't worried, but he acts like he's worried. Philip. And this he said to prove him, for he himself knew what he would do. Jesus knew all along he was going to make all that food, but he went up to Philip and he said, how are we going to take care of this situation? What do you think, Philip? How are we going to handle this? Philip answered him, 200 penny worth of bread is not sufficient for them, that every one of them may take a little. You know, we ain't got enough of money. We can't really do nothing. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, saith unto him, there's a lad here which hath 5 barley loaves and 2 small fishes. But what are they to so among so many? Jesus said, make the men sit down. Now there was much grass in the place, so the men sat down in number above 5,000. And Jesus took the loaves and divided it out. The NIV says in verse 6, he asked this only to test them. So is there things in our life that God is testing our faith? You know, God, Jesus knew what he was going to do, right? He knew he was going to split up that food and give it to the 5,000. But he asked, Philip, what are we going to do? Huh? What do you think? Do you have an answer? He wanted to see what Philip's response was. I don't know if Philip passed the test. It doesn't really say he did. But they did get the money from the one young lad. And sometimes I think that's all we need to do is just whatever we have, we need to go forward and start. You make the first effort and then watch what happens. And sometimes our faith can't even make that first effort. No, God, I can't do that. Give 40% of my income? No, God, I can't do that. God says, you start, and I'll take care. Or however he challenges our faith. And some of those things he does just to test us. Think about it. And do we pass those tests of faith? I'm afraid I don't always. God asks us for things that we think are totally impossible, and we shut them down right away. Oh, no, God, I can't do that. I'm not even going to try. Really? You take that first step. See if God will do it. He probably will. He will if he calls you to it. He challenges our small thinking. The third one, Jesus asked his disciples to go into all the world. How are they going to go into all the world? Yeah, I mean, we ain't got cars. We ain't got airplanes. All the world, really? But it's amazing what their ministry did kind of take them to all the world. The Holy Spirit led. Their prayers could pray for all the world. And I guess I want to ask us, or ask myself today too, what from small thinking is God asking in my life? What is he challenging us to? What ministry maybe? Is he calling you to the mission field? Is he asking you to start a ministry here? You know, small thinking do we have that we just think we can't do it? I got a house to pay off. I got children to raise. I got to take care of mommy and daddy. I'm stuck here right now. Really? What does God challenge us to? It's amazing some of our excuses, and I think some of the things that we don't do. He challenges our priorities, our faith, and our small thinking. How do we help people discover that higher cause? You know, we have our children, people at church, and we really want to be a faithful family. We really want to do something, or we really want to help the church out. You know, there's got to be more for Shade Mountain than what we have. There's got to be more for my lawn business than what I have. How do we do that? I got 4 here. We think, we pray, we ask, and suggest. How we think? Let's start thinking. Who in our life is God calling you to lead or challenge? Do we do that? Some of the people in your life, God put them there to lead you. Other people in your life, God put in their life to lead them. Now, is there somebody? Now, let's just start with one person. And I'd like to challenge you in this. I think especially as I'm speaking to adults, I'm not speaking to young children. Who in this church or that you work with needs a challenge? Or who do you think? I'm thinking in the last while, Ben Glick died in our church. He's a week younger than me, older than me. And he has a son that really takes interest in spiritual things, likes to talk to people. And I'm thinking God's calling me to think about him. Matt's his name. I think I need to think about Matt. I need to challenge him. He doesn't have his father anymore. He's sincere. He needs someone to challenge him. I think maybe that's who God wants for me. And maybe the rest of you. Is there a young person that seems to have so much potential? They just need a couple people to think about them and press the right buttons. And, you know, it's amazing on the encouragement and what we can do for people. And I think we can think about this for our children, too. What do I need to do next? I need to pray. You know, what strength and talents and ability is this person's life that I need to encourage? Thinking of Matt, you know, what would he be good at? Would it be good for him to maybe go to Bald Eagle? Should I encourage him to go to Bald Eagle? He's smart. He's actually going to college this fall. He asked me for advice. You know, he probably listened to me. You know, what from talents should I prompt him, or what should I tell him to start dating? Or, you know, there's different things. You know, pray to God, you know, how can I meet that, reach that person's needs? And I think then we need to ask ourselves, the third one, ask yourself after you pray, what do I see potential in this person's life? And then we need to do the work, suggest it. And I think this is a question that I think has moved many people in our churches and Christian people. Have you ever thought about? Ask people that. Have you ever thought about what? Being a chief at Bald Eagle. Have you ever thought about being a teacher? Have you ever thought about starting your own business? You know, do we do that? But think about that. If someone would have took interest in you in your life at maybe 19, 20, 21, and would have said, have you ever thought about going to such and such a place? Or even some of us that get older, have you ever thought about starting your own business? I know that's not always important. But I think that question, I don't know about you, but if people would ask me that question, it would make my mind spin, right? How about Lloyd? If I come up to you after the meeting here, and I'm not to embarrass you. Lloyd, did you ever think about going to Africa? You think you'd go home tonight and think about that? Probably. You know, that's how God moves in the people's lives. And I think if we do the things before, think, pray, and ask, and then do the suggesting, God will lead us in some of those ways. And I think some people have done some great things because people were willing to ask him that question or to suggest that thing to them. And maybe some of you ministers. And it don't have to just be the ministers. I think it means just as much when lay members do that to other people in the church. I think our church will end up being do some great things just because we're willing to challenge each other in some of these things. And it don't just have to be the ministers. I think that's where leadership in the church is so neat. And I think it's ministers are always blessed when they see other people doing that, right? When you see other people in the church challenging other people to do ministry and to get involved in people's lives. That's what leadership is. Ladies, you can do that as well, maybe even better than some of us men do it. Do it. Do it. We miss out. So we learn how to be leaders an example, how to give people a greater purpose. And the third one I have here is affirm people for their potential. Maybe thinking about encouragement. Now, I'm not good at this one. You can ask my wife. She would probably say yes. I'm not good at this one. And so this one really spoke to me. But I think this is so big as a leader, is affirming people for their potential. When someone believes in you, it causes you to have courage, and it brings out the best in you. It just does. And like I said before, I don't know why I'm not a better encourager, because my mom was always good at it. And it seems like most of us children weren't really scared of too much of anything in life, because mom always believed in us. You know, if nobody else sticks up for us, mom will, and that's all that matters. You know, that develops secure children. And I think when mom and dad believe in their children and affirm them, it makes secure children, that children do things that can't believe they're actually doing that. And it takes children even farther than what we went ourselves. We all need someone in our life who pushes us spiritually. Are you doing that with someone? Are you? One of the things that I've been trying to really develop in my life is when I go to church, I'm not saying I do good at it, when I go to church, I want to leave church that day thinking of who I challenged spiritually or who I encouraged. I don't know what you're coming. This is after church. You know, who have I met after church that I could bless after church? Who did I encourage after church? And I think church is such a great place to do that after church. I think it's neat that us beachy people like to visit for a half hour, 45 minutes afterwards. I think that fellowship is sometimes almost a highlight for me. But think about it. Pray about it. Pray about the people that are sitting next to you. Does God want me to talk to him after church? How can I encourage him? How can I, you know, brother, how was your spiritual life this week? Oh, I wonder if I'm going to be sitting beside Calvin church today, because he's going to ask about my spiritual life. You know, it's good for us to know that there's brothers that care about us spiritually, right? That's good for us. Sisters, you too. You know, I think it's such a shame that we come home from church and we found out how our brother was terribly busy this week and he could hardly get around and life was just horrible. He didn't hardly get any sleep that night. And these ladies come home and, oh, it was such a busy week. School was, it just keeps me busy. My children kept me going. You know, why do we talk about stuff like that at church when we could be encouraging each other? There's so many ways to bless each other. But maybe do that. Do it in church. Pray about it. You know, who, God, are you going to lead me to after church to be a blessing to? And someone said, oh, church was so boring today. Just minister wasn't any good, and nobody said nice stuff to me today, and nobody would even talk to me, and he walked over there, and I wanted to talk. And it's all about me. But how about who can I help today? If everybody in church would come to church thinking about who they could affirm, who they could help that day, we would be a thriving church, wouldn't we? And I think that's something we need to do. That's just a challenge that I've been bringing. And there's so many other places that we can do that too. And we all need someone in our life who pushes us spiritually. Are you doing that with someone? Are we? All of us. Doesn't matter what our ages are. There's other people that need to be pushed spiritually. And I think most of us got younger brothers and sisters or other people younger at church. And, you know, I just, 12, 13, 14-year-olds, you know, you can't believe an impact that some of us can have on that age. My brother teaches 8th grade at Weavertown. He loves that age. They just soak everything up, he says. I mean, my brother Crick can do nothing wrong at school. at that age group, you can impact children at that age, 8th grade, 7th grade. You can give them encouragement in their lives. Boy, you know what? You're going to be a preacher someday. I can tell it. I mean, you remember how it was at that age. We hung on to stuff like that. We hung on to stuff. That stuff meant something to us. And why aren't we better at it? I mean, we can make spiritual giants by, you know, we've heard people that there was just one encouraging word that someone gave to me one time, and I still am thriving on that 30 years later. Or there was this one teacher in my life that taught me this thing and blessed me in this way, and I still am living off of that. It's not really that hard. Let's do it. Affirm people for their potential. And in Mark 10:21, I was talking about the rich young ruler, it says there, Jesus looked steadily at him. This is in another translation. And he was filled with love for him. And I think another way that we can help people to their potential is to give them that attention, to look steadily at them. And I was thinking about this at church today, after church today. A couple people came to talk to me. And you know, was I quickly trying to get away from them and trying to talk to another person beside me? And, you know, that's hard to do sometimes in church. But I think it's important as we look steadily at people and give them our attention. People know if you're in a hurry and don't really want to talk to them. They know if they don't really care, that you'd rather be talking to other people. And I think that's hurtful to people. I think we need to learn how to really give our attention to people. And I made a commitment in my business. I spray yards for a living. Get to 20, 30 places a day. And I'm usually about always busy. But I've tried to make a commitment that I wouldn't feel like I'm busy. When I get to the people's place, they are important to me right now. Your questions mean something to me. I'm not worried about getting to the next place. And I think some of us have this thing that, you know, I'm always busy. I don't have time for you. I need to move to the next spot. And if you're busy, still learn. And you know what's sad is when mothers do that to their children too, right? And our children or dads too busy to talk to them. And after a while, our children get older, and they've been rejected. The mom and dad didn't have time for them so long. They get married, and then dad wishes they come back to them for advice, right? Mom, back to them for advice. But what? We were too busy for them all their lives. They finally learned that you can't go to mom and dad for anything that you need because they're too busy. And I think that's sad, because we want our children to constantly, right? Especially when you get older, it just feels good to have your children come back to you and ask you for advice. And I think if we don't have time for them, if we don't spending our attention to our children now, to the people around us, someday no one's going to care about us either. And that's sad. And I think, yeah. Your thoughts? I'm rambling. Or if I'm not boring you. Anybody, how are we good encouragers? What do you think? How do we do to the church? Okay, I'm going to keep going. Everyone in our life has enormous potential. Is God asking you to unlock those doors of potential? And that's what we need to look. You know, so many times we look at people at their bad points or their things that they're not good at. But let's start looking at people and their potential. What could they become? I mean, what did Jesus see in his 12 disciples when he asked them? I mean, all of them were, to me, kind of losers, but he saw potential, right? And do we see that in the people? Do we see that in our, or are we a pastor, or are we an employer that's always critical towards our congregation or critical towards our employees? If I only have good people working for me, my business would thrive. Or if the people at church would just listen to the rules and respect me, we'd be a good church. My children would just do what I tell them. We'd have a good house. But no. Do we look at the potential? We can look at it completely opposite. Great people in this church. Man, it's such a blessing to be a pastor at the church here at Shade Mountain. I got to find out how to unlock those keys to really make something out of them. Or my children, I wish I'd have the energy that child has. Hey, I know it's tough sometimes. They have too much energy, but do we look at that as potential? You know, do we look at our employees? You know, I think we need to do that. How do I unlock the potential in my children, my wife, my employees? Treat them the way you want them to become, not the way they are. You know, sometimes I think we just treat our children as, you always get F's. You're always going to be the poorest in the class. What's your problem? Yeah, he probably will. Mom thinks he will. Dad thinks he's always going to get F's. He probably always will. Or, you know what, Kyle? I know you're getting F's now, but someday I got this feeling you're going to get straight A's, just like Ben Carson. He used to be the poorest in the class too, but man, he started reading books and he ended up running for president. I think you can be the same way. You know, is that the things our children need to hear? Yeah. Don't give them the idea that they can be far greater than if they are. You know, if they're always losers and mom and dad knows it and makes them believe that, they'll stay losers, right? You know, why did Ben Carson make something out of it? His mom thought he could. And she was determined he would, and she believed in him. And I think we can do the same thing for our children. Treat them the way you want them to become, not the way they are. And that's why so many children just continue to struggle and have problems. Jesus did it to Peter, Matthew 16:18. If you want to turn there, but when the word Peter actually means a pebble. But what did Jesus tell him? I want to read that. Matthew 16:18. In 5 minutes, that's over, right? And I say also unto thee, thou, that thou art Peter, and upon this rock will I build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. Peter always thought I was this little pebble, not my name means pebble. But Jesus said, no, you're a rock. You're going to do something. You have potential. And Peter, what, let out in the church and started 5,000 people got saved in one day and was one of the strong men. And I think that's why his disciples went where they did. Jesus believed in them. And they Peter ended up being the rock. Nagging and labeling people doesn't work. Jesus didn't do it. Jesus didn't, you know, he didn't make a big deal on how dumb James and John were there for asking that. And And oh, he's again, you argued about it again. We just went through that a couple weeks ago about who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom. You know, he never talked demeaning about his people. What did he do? He said, I'm going to show you how to be a servant. That's what means the most. It wasn't a demeaning talk. It was gave him potential. If you are going to be a servant, you will be the greatest. That's what Peter and James and John needed to hear, right? And I think we can do the same thing. John 14:12, anyone who has faith in me will do what I have been doing. In fact, he will do even greater things than me because I'm going to the Father. Really? Jesus told us that we can do greater things than him? Wow, that's believing in us, isn't it? We can. We now have the Holy Spirit. I mean, Jesus was restrained to the little small town of Jerusalem and maybe up to Capernaum a couple of times in the Galilee, about 60-mile period. My 23-year-old's been to China, Indonesia. Our children get all over the world. I mean, the potential that we have now compared, I mean, we can reach people that, millions almost. Jesus didn't have that. But yeah, he believed in us. He said, you can even do greater things than me because I'm going to my Father. And we can. We have the Holy Spirit in our lives. We can pray for people on the other side of the world. And we get frustrated, yes, at technology. But technology has given us connectedness to people that we never had connectedness to before. And our children can do things far greater than I probably ever can do. I never was at Indonesia when I was 21. I haven't been that many places. And I think it's... believing in our children like Jesus did. That's such a great statement there. Yeah. Anyone who has faith in me will do what I have been doing. In fact, he will even do greater things than me. Jesus, the perfect man, said that about me. If that shouldn't give you a boost to want to get out there and get involved and become what Jesus wants us to do, I'm not sure what will. Our Father believes in us. He sees a potential in us. He's not condemning. He doesn't demean us. We have no excuse, right? Part of leadership is helping people recognize their uniqueness. Maybe I'll run over these a little bit and then catch it again tomorrow evening. People are not things to be molded. And I think that's what we want to do to our children too often. They are lives to be unfolded. You know, I certain things that I think I'm good at life, and I want my children to kind of be good at those things. But I think we need to learn a good leader will find the uniqueness in each child and he'll try to unfold his potential, not to mold him. You know, I've been fun to mold a bunch of Calvins in my family. And we tend to do that. And what's really hard for me, the boy that's named after me, Calvin Jr., is probably the most like me. And I just tend to want to manipulate his life and make him right like me. But I need to try to find his potential, whatever it is, in other areas and let him grow. He doesn't have to be mini Calvin, even though he's Calvin Jr. He needs to be a person himself. And I think that's what we need to do, unfold our children. Are we making our children into mini-me's? Some of us are trying to. God wants us to unfold them, their potential, to their uniqueness, to something else. I like this one. Catch your children doing something right. Often, we only catch them doing something wrong. Right? Does mom ever find that all day long you're just trying to, you say no, how many times? It gets frustrating, right? How about trying to make a goal of how many times I can catch my children doing right today and saying something about it? Maybe every time we tell them, no, don't do that, we should say, that's nice you did that. And I think that would be something that would be good for all of us. I don't know why it's so much easier to catch what goes wrong than catch what goes right. Am I the only one that's that way? But you know, I think a lot of us are that way. And I think that's part of finding the uniqueness in our children and encouraging our children is to catch your children doing something right often. We only catch those doing something wrong. Okay. Tomorrow night we got 4 other ones to cover. And thanks for your attention. And I do apologize for not letting you talk more. Maybe I'll do better tomorrow night.